If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. Congress hung closed signs on a big swath of the government Tuesday and sent home 800,000 workers in what President Barack Obama labeled an ideological crusade by GOP lawmakers determined to gut his health care law. On Capitol Hill, House Republicans answered with a bid to restart a few favored slices of government, including national parks, while still demanding concessions on health care. Parks and monuments were the most visible casualty on the first day of the first partial government shutdown in more than a decade. With the Republican-controlled House and Democratic-controlled Senate at stalemate, it's unclear how long the shutdown will last or whom the public will blame for unanswered phones and locked doors. Obama immediately labeled it a Republican shutdown.
They've shut down the government over an ideological crusade to deny affordable health insurance to millions of Americans.
The president called on lawmakers to pass a budget and end the shutdown, saying we're better than this. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Hello there and welcome aboard. This is Radio Free America on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Duke Brooks here. Thanks a lot for being along for this Wednesday, October 2nd edition of Radio Free America, where the number, as usual, is 718-305-7176. Chat room open for business, and, you know, there are a lot of things going on. We've got a couple of great guests this evening. My friend Jake Danishevsky is going to be with us in two shakes of a lamb's tail, as they say. Jake is basically a Soviet expat. I don't know if I want to say he's a refugee. He was allowed to legally leave the country. He left Russia, came to the United States, and has written a book about what it was like to grow up in Russia, a country where the entire focus of everything coming from the government was that communism is great, Karl Marx is right, capitalism is evil, America is the bad guy, you are living a better life than anybody else in the world is, and we're going to talk to Jake about that. It should be very, very interesting, so stay right where you are. In the second hour tonight, not only will we be delving into Civil War history, as we always do, this being the sesquicentennial anniversary, the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, but we will also have Kevin Wade with us this evening. Kevin, as you know, a particular friend of this program and the Delaware GOP candidate for the United States Senate last year, going up against a guy that I think Tom Carper had been the senator from Delaware when the Civil War broke out. He is one of these guys that is, and I know Senator Carper, he's a nice enough old guy, but the fact of the matter is Senator Carper has never had any employer in his life except the United States government or the government of the state of Delaware. That's it. I think he worked flipping burgers one summer when he was in college in West Virginia. I think he's from West Virginia, but he's lived in Delaware. Maybe he went to the University of Delaware. But other than that, the guy has never, ever, ever had a real job in the private sector. And this, you know, I've got to be honest with you, I am beginning to believe that this is something that has to be stopped. We simply cannot have these people that live their entire lives on the taxpayer's dime, that have never, ever, ever had to meet a payroll, have never, ever had to worry about a paycheck, have never, ever had to experience the actual results of the decisions that they are now making as regulators. You know, I think it was Senator McGovern who ran against Nixon in famously in 1972. George McGovern, senator from North Dakota, I think, North or South Dakota, real leftist. Yeah, he was a war hero in World War II, no question about that. He was a bomber pilot in the U.S. Army Air Corps in World War II. And as far as I'm concerned, and he flew many combat missions. As far as I'm concerned, that makes him a war hero. But other than that, he was a real leftist, and he ran in 1972 against Richard Nixon on the "Let us have peace at any price" platform, which is what the Democrats, that's generally, you know, that's at least what they say. And then after he retired from politics, Senator McGovern bought a bed and breakfast in Maine or Massachusetts or something. And he opened it for business, and after a year or two, he had to close it. And the reason he had to close it was that he, with all of the regulations that were in effect, he simply could not make a go of it. And he was quoted in either, it was either the New York Times or Wall Street Journal or New Yorker or something, basically saying that he wishes he had thought through his votes as basically a permanent entrenched career legislator in Washington, D.C., when he was voting for this regulation, that regulation, increasing business taxes, increasing personal taxes, increasing property, increasing every kind of tax imaginable, and increasing every kind of regulation imaginable. He then went into business after he had helped put all those things into effect, and boom, guess what? He realized he couldn't make a go of it. He just could not do it. Now, whether the overregulation is the reason it did not work for him, or whether it was just the fact that as someone who really had never worked in business and had never had to meet a payroll, had never really had to solve any of the problems that people had to solve, was the reason. I don't know. We don't know. But what we do know is that he did say in the article that he wished he had not voted all of the regulations that he had voted for when he was. You know what? The Democrats really, they kind of poo-poo that. You know, the Democrats are all about rendering every single form of human behavior in this country either compulsory or prohibited. It's either going to be mandatory or it's going to be forbidden. The only things that you can do are going to be either mandatory or forbidden. And that's basically where, you know, the Democrats are coming from. They simply do not trust other human beings to make decisions on their own. And, of course, they're inspired by Karl Marx. I mean, let's be honest here. 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America. We got some good news yesterday. We got some bad news today. The good news yesterday is that the federal government is shut down. And, you know, I think when the – that's good news. I think when the American people realize just how much government they don't miss, if the Republicans can get it together somehow and they can keep the government shut down through the end of this year, maybe through the beginning of next year, and then maybe in the springtime – enough congressmen and senators will hear from their constituents saying, you know what, the government was shut down, but I didn't even feel it. why don't we get rid of the Office of the Acting Chief Deputy Assistant Staff Administrative Undersecretary, the Assistant Deputy Director of the Division of the Bureau of the Department of the Office of the Authority of the Deputy Chief Administrator for Administration there in Washington, D.C. Maybe we can survive and exist and actually get things done without that office and the paper shuffling, clock watching, thumb twiddling, form filing, rubber stamping, bungling, bumbling, fumbling, stumbling, grumbling bureaucrats who literally do nothing that is meaningful in every way in that office. Maybe we can get rid of all of them. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if we can figure out a way to reduce the cost of the federal government by even 30%, our economy will begin to mushroom. It will be a tremendous thing, an absolutely wonderful thing. The majority of what the federal government does, we just don't need. I am hoping that they will remain closed for a very long time. The military will still be there. Public safety and other essential jobs of government will still be there. The majority of the courts will be open. The FBI, which serves a public safety function, and that is the central defining job of government, of course, is public safety. The FBI is still going to be there. The Secret Service is still going to be there. So I don't really know what anybody is all that worried about. It's going to be a whole bunch of basically just bureaucratic functions that ultimately do not really do anything. Those are the ones that are going to be gone. And heck, man, that's all right with me. You know, we'll tell you about the bad news in a moment. You know, I cannot imagine anything that would be as outrageous or that would shock the consciousness of an American nearly as much as the idea of an innocent person being wrongfully convicted and put behind bars for a crime that they didn't commit. But, as they say, sunlight is the best disinfectant. Now, we are proud to welcome A Just Cause with Sam Thurman and Cliff Stewart to Tuesday nights on conservativenationmedia.com. Sam and Cliff take a hard look at what happens when the wheels of justice trample the rights of innocent Americans. These are real cases of real people who are actually innocent, but who were wrongfully convicted. So join us for A Just Cause, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. It is about, we're coming up to about 14 minutes after the hour. 718-305-7176 is the number here at Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. The bad news is that Tom Clancy has passed away. If you don't know who Tom Clancy was, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, starting around 1986, 87, excuse me, sometime around there, Tom Clancy, 1984 was his first novel. All right, this is from Newsmax, by the way. By Alexandra Ward, President Ronald Reagan was a big fan of Tom Clancy's military thriller novels and even helped the author get on the New York Times bestseller list for the first time in the 1980s. Clancy, who penned technical espionage and military crime books, died Tuesday at a hospital in Baltimore. He was 66. Reagan was so taken with Clancy's first novel, The Hunt for Red October, from 1984, that he once joked that he was losing sleep because he couldn't put it down, according to the AP. Clancy has said Reagan's endorsement was a key to his early success and helped him achieve bestseller status. Clancy reportedly regularly referred to President Reagan as my president. Some of Clancy's other bestsellers include Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, The Sum of All Fears, all of which were later turned into major motion pictures. His next book, Command Authority, is scheduled to be published in December. I really liked Tom Clancy. You know, he is from Maryland. There's a major road in Maryland called U.S. Route 50. U.S. Route 50 starts on the East Coast in Ocean City, Maryland, and it goes all the way to Sacramento, California, 3,073 miles it is. And there's a section of Route 50 that crosses the Chesapeake Bay, and that will take you down to Ocean City. And on your way to Ocean City from Baltimore, Washington, and Annapolis over Route 50, the first major size kind of small city that you hit is called Easton, and the next one is Cambridge. And I used to pass a sign in front of a store on Route 50, believe it was in Easton, it might have been in Cambridge, and the sign said, Nationwide Insurance, Tom Clancy, Chartered Life Underwriter, COU, Tom Clancy, Nationwide Insurance, and that was him. And I, you know, having lived on the Delmarva Peninsula for a very, very long time, quite a few people that I know did business with Tom Clancy in the early 1980s, the late 70s, when he was an insurance guy. And I met one lady who said to me that her parents had gone in there into Tom's office in 79 or 82 or something, and they went in there to buy insurance from him, and she described Tom Clancy as telling her parents that he was writing a book at the time about the defection of a Soviet submarine, and this was going to be the best book, and he hoped that they will buy it when it comes out. And he was really, really excited about his first book, The Hunt for Red October. And the lady told me that her parents then said, well, we hope you're going to be a better novel writer than you are an insurance guy, because you ain't much, you know. Okay, you know, that's a typical kind of Eastern Shore reaction to anything that does not exist on the Eastern Shore. Let's see here, 17 minutes after the hour, going to take a quick break. Jake Danishevsky will be joining me when we come back, talking about the good old days in the Rodina. Stay right where you are. Don't go away.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
Prevent your child's next asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many. Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Welcome back. Our music there from Moonlight Request, which I believe is Alfred Hitchcock's best movie. I don't know if you've seen the movie Hitchcock, in which it came out last year. Anthony Hopkins plays Alfred Hitchcock, and what is that British actress who was all the rage? She played his wife, but anyway. A lot of people think Psycho was his best film. I think North by Northwest was. Anyway, speaking of the Cold War, Jake Danishevsky, welcome to Radio Free America, my friend. How are you doing tonight, pal?
I'm doing great, Duke. How are you? This is great to be on the show.
Well, thanks very much. Now, as I mentioned earlier, you were born and raised in the Soviet Union, correct?
Absolutely. And just so quickly, I'm not a refugee, but on the other hand, we were supposed to give up our status. So I don't know, I guess in a way we were immigrants with some refugee status. Because we could not come back to Soviet Union until it went and broke the wall and there was no more Iron Curtain. So in reality, we could never come back while we were living.
Well, I don't want you to get too specific about how old you are because people do not, generally want to talk. But how many years did you live in the Soviet Union before you came to America? You were about 13 or so when you came over here?
I was 13 and a half, close to 14. Yeah, I remember as if it was yesterday. And even though I was not old enough to know everything, I saw the way my parents and, everybody else around us lived, and it was pretty much the same picture no matter how you looked and where you looked. Not that we were equal, we were just all equally miserable.
Yeah. Now, what the Soviet government, you were living in what I would, and maybe I'm sure you would agree with me, life in the Soviet Union was kind of a propaganda-rich environment, wasn't it? I mean, you were being told things by the government's propaganda ministry all the time in one form and in one way or another. Isn't that about right?
Oh, that's absolutely right. I mean, the only way you can keep people in line and have them think that you live in the best society in the world is using propaganda and constantly lying to them that you live in the best society. I mean, if you think about it, even living behind the curtain, even growing up and constantly being conditioned in a way to understand that this is the best society, you still understand that there is much out there. You just don't know. And I gave a speech one time, and I said, you truly do not understand freedom until you lost it. But if you never had it, you truly do not understand what it really means. I mean, I understood freedom is maybe having a pair of jeans, maybe having a stereo, maybe having, something that was not available. But when you come to America and you truly realize that you're free, I can't even explain that meaning to people who never actually lost it.
There is an American comedian, actually he's a Russian comedian, and you may know of him. His name is Yakov Smirnov.
Oh, yeah.
And, he came over here in the 80s. He was able to get over here somehow, and he always had very funny things to say. He said one of the differences between America and the Soviet Union is that in America you can always find a party, but in the Soviet Union the party always finds you. I thought that was very interesting. He said in Russia there are two TV channels. On channel one, there is KGB propaganda. On channel two, there is a KGB agent saying, go back to channel one. Now, was it hard to get out of the Soviet Union?
It was hard. We didn't have it as hard maybe as some other people. maybe we were not, we were, I would say, fortunate. We didn't really have anything that they could hold us or hold against us. My father didn't have a high, clearance job. My parents didn't have money. My parents didn't have anything that they could be sort of, tagged as anti-Soviet. So in reality, my parents weren't part of the Communist Party, because that was also a problem. If you were leaving and you were part of the Communist Party, they drilled you. They gave you a speech that you're a traitor. I mean, we were still considered traitors, and we were still, it was not easy to leave, but, you had to get papers. My father's father went missing in World War II. So he had to get a paper that he's dead. But since there was no death certificate, he had to get a paper that he was missing in action. Now, in Soviet Union, to get a paper like that was nearly impossible. So we had to figure things out to get all this paperwork and then go to Moscow, which was not close to us because we were from Ukraine. And in Moscow, my dad had to go with an attorney and present his case. Now, if they told us that something's missing, my dad would have to start over and wait for another date. In the meantime, after you apply and you're ready to go to Moscow, you cannot have a job. I was out of school, and literally you don't have any more money coming in. So in reality, if you cannot leave on the first try, what do you start doing for money or anything else? So even though it's a sort of provide for all society, you still consider a traitor, and right away you're deemed as an enemy.
Well, the Soviet government was kind of paranoid, and I think, I think the Russian people have a different outlook on the world and on life than the American people do. And that's because of the history of Russia, which is different from the history of America, obviously. But when you were over there, what sort of things did you hear from people? And I'm presuming that this would have been a lot of quietly whispered stories about what life was like in America. What did you hear?
Well, as a kid, from the kid's standpoint, you hear that people have genes. People have chewing gum. People have these things that are like minimal and insignificant, but we didn't have them. I mean, if you had a pair of jeans, you could sell them for 200-300 rubles, and that's about the same as what person was making per month. So you're talking about a pair of jeans that would cost $20 in America. Now, for an adult, whispering and listening to BBC and try, and I mean, if you listen to BBC and you can catch it on your radio at home, you better listen so quietly that nobody hears it, including your kids. Because if your kid in school says, oh, my parents were listening to some radio station, you could get your parents in trouble without even realizing it. So my parents would listen to BBC. They would try to get some news outside of Russia just to hear things. And, of course, when you see tourists, when you see different people, the delegations from other countries, you see the way they smile, the way they dress, the way they look. And you know that there's things that are better outside of Soviet Union. You knew that. You didn't hear it on TV. You didn't hear it from your officials. You did not hear it from your teachers. But you just knew that. You're not ignorant. You know there's a world out there.
Well, there certainly was. And obviously the communist system is one that, at the end of the day, very obviously it does not work. Now, I wanted to ask you, why do you think, anyway, that even though it is obvious and it is clear to the entire world that Marxism simply does not work, it cannot work, why do you think it is still so attractive to so many leftists and political Democrats here in the United States? Why do you think that is?
Well, I'll tell you two theories that I have. First of all, Marxism is a theory. It's never a reality. Marxism is always a theory, a very flawed theory from an alcoholic who was a bum, who did not work and actually let a couple of his own children die from starvation. So now this is a theory of a madman. And, of course, it sounds great in theory, so you can sell it on emotion. And as Lenin, here's my first part of this formula. What Lenin called people, Lenin was a communist. He knew what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing. Stalin knew what he was doing. But they called, Lenin called these people who follow him, who will follow him blindly because he's promising them something that could never possibly exist in reality. He called them useful idiots. Now,
yeah,
I'm not
that's
calling,
right.
I'm sorry. I'm not calling all the liberals or leftists useful idiots, but if something sounds too, well, not all at least, maybe some of them do have a brain, but the problem is some of them think they're so smart. This is the second part of my theory. They think they're so smart that we're not enlightened enough to understand this amazing theory that's based only on emotion. And that's the second part of the problem. They're either not educated enough or they're educated enough think that we're not smart enough to understand that this could be good for all of us. And this is a problem, this is a problem with Marxist theory. People think that it can work. It's just Russians or Cubans or Chinese did not do it right. So they want to try again what historically never worked.
That is very much the case. Jake, let me ask you to stand by for a moment. We're going to take a quick break here. We will be back with Jake Danishevsky in just a couple of moments. You know, one of the worst things that can happen to an American today, besides having to live with Obamacare, is identity theft. And if it happens to you, it could take months or maybe even longer to recover from it. That is, if you can recover at all. So don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There really is nothing that even comes close to LifeLock. So to protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. The network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com. Click on the LifeLock banner. You will be glad that you did. You will also be glad that you stick with us because after this break, we've got more with Jake Danishevsky. So stay right where you are.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never. Let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
$10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari. You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Duke Brooks here. This is the Wednesday, October 2nd edition. We're about 25 minutes before the top of the second hour here. And I'm joined by my buddy Jake Danishevsky, a former Soviet guy who was able to get out of the Soviet Union, or Jake, as they say in Russian, the Rodina, correct? That's the motherland, right?
Yes, Rodina, correct.
Okay, now, you're actually Ukrainian, though, right?
Well, no, I was born in Ukraine, but I'm a Russian Jew. And if you don't mind, can I finish the point we started before the commercial?
Yeah, so please, of course, of course.
There's a little more that I wanted to say. I actually had a few arguments with such enlightened people who actually read a lot, they understand a lot, and they try to prove to me that the communism is one of the better systems, and socialism is even better. And all I had to ask them is this: have you ever lived in it? Because people always base their emotion and their intellect on theory. But most of these people who enjoy socialism, they actually never tried it. People like Michael Moore, who go to Cuba, come back, Cuba is the best country in the world. Let Michael Moore go to Cuba for 2 years and just live there. And I want to hear him say that Cuba is the best country in the world.
Well, I don't think that he would do that. You know, because once you go into Cuba, of course, you're not allowed to come out. And my question to him and all of the other left-wing theorists in this world is, if these countries are so wonderful and if they provide such an incredible standard of living, if they provide such an incredible sense of what many American leftists and communist sympathizers today refer to as economic and social justice, if they are so wonderful, why is the penalty for leaving them death? Why is it? I mean, if you try to leave Cuba, you get shot. From what I understand, if you try to sneak out of the Soviet Union, you wouldn't necessarily be shot, but you would certainly be looking at very serious prison time once they caught you. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. We actually, when we left the country legally, and we did not want to be part of that country, but my parents had to pay, as part of the immigration process, for us to be allowed to leave. We had to pay for every adult in order to be able to lose our citizenship. So to lose Soviet citizenship that you didn't want in the first place, you actually had to pay the money, and that was one of the preconditions of them approving you to leave. It's just amazing. It's just, you don't want to be in the country, and they're forcing you to pay for something you don't want. That's something that we're seeing here right now about something else.
kind of like Obamacare.
Absolutely.
Sounds like the exact same thing, actually, you know.
Absolutely.
Now, I once read that airliners that operated in the Soviet Union, they were very careful about how much fuel would be on the airliners so that a pilot could not fly the airliner out of the Soviet Union. And in addition to that, in the cockpit, on the flight deck of the airliner, there was a pilot, a co-pilot, maybe a navigator or an engineer, but there was also somebody else whose title was aircraft commander. And this was somebody that generally didn't know how to fly, but he was a member of the party, he was politically trusted, and he had a gun with him. And his job was to make sure that the pilot didn't try to simply defect on his own. Is that correct? Did I get that right?
I didn't know that for a fact, but I wouldn't pass it by them, and you most likely are correct, because I'll tell you something else. If you came to Soviet Union as a tourist organization, let's say you came as 20 people, within your tourist American organization, there would be a few people who speak English just like Americans, and they look like Americans, but they're KGB agents. And they're within the organization to make sure that the delegates within that group do not speak to any Russians, and those Russians do not say anything they don't like about their country or their government, because there is no freedom of speech, and there is no freedom of saying you don't like communism, and you're not allowed to tell others, because Cognizant is supposed to be the best system in the world. I mean, so they actually have CGV agents within each group to make sure people don't talk too much.
Unbelievable. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, people advocated this system so relentlessly and forcefully, and they sang its praises, and they talked about how absolutely wonderful it was, and that it was so much better than capitalism because under that system, everybody was entitled to everything that they needed. But for some reason, they had to take everybody's political rights and civil rights away in order to confer what they referred to as economic rights on everybody. I guess the lesson, Jake, is that you can have economic rights, but you cannot have political and civil rights at the same time, or you can have political and civil rights, but you cannot have economic rights. You'll notice in America, we do not have economic rights in this country. And the Soviets and Cubans and the North Koreans and the other communist country always purport to offer economic rights, but in reality, they never did. What was it like to have to get a doctor? What if you needed a doctor over in Russia when you were a kid? What if you needed a doctor?
Well, I'll tell you two stories that basically will explain to you about the whole nationalized doctor's work for government healthcare. I needed a surgery. I had adenoids. I had a problem with my congestion, my nasal congestion. And my mom took me to a doctor who was supposed to be the best doctor in Kiev. Oh, and just to quickly tell you, I'm not Ukrainian. I'm a Soviet Jew. I'm Jewish by birth, but I was not even religious in Russia. I was only Jewish by birth and because of a lot of beatings I received from classmates. But to take you back to the healthcare, we went to this best doctor in the city, and my mom, we did a consultation. She goes, we have to take these adenoids out. My mom, in order to make sure that this government-employed doctor does a good job, she gave him 25 rubles, which is comparable to $25. She brought boxes of chocolates, and my parents weren't rich, but they wanted to make sure that I received proper treatment in this equal opportunity government-owned hospital. So she brought boxes of chocolates to the nurses, and I got adenoids pulled. And when I say pulled, I don't mean figuratively speaking. They pulled them. They had to tie me down and literally pull them out of my throat. Now, that's one case. Second case, my grandmother's sister broke her ankle at 55 years old. She was a very vibrant, energetic woman. She was 55 years old. She was in the hospital with a broken ankle. And this is a story that actually one of the things that inspired my book. When I wrote this story, people just were appalled. This lady, who was 55 years old with a broken ankle, died in a Russian hospital. You want to guess why? Well, you know why, because you read the book. Pain medication the entire night for 8 hours because some bureaucrat couldn't decide if he has to approve pain medication or not. And this 55-year-old lady died from a simple injury.
Jake, that is what is in the future of an awful lot of Americans if Obamacare is allowed to continue to remain in effect. Jake, let me ask you to hang on just for a moment. Wanted to mention one or two things to the folks listening this evening. If you like or if you love conservative internet radio as much as we here do, then you already know about the Grit and Grace radio show. Jennifer Meadows and Josh Bernstein have been carrying the conservative message on the net for years. And now they're here on conservativenationmedia.com. Join Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central for solid American patriotism, unapologetic commentary the latest news and conservative analysis with a very good dose of plain old-fashioned fun thrown in as well. That's the Grit and Grace Radio Show every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Jake, I'm so glad that you're in the United States. When the Soviet Union collapsed, there were American leftists, most of which were college professors, of course, who were beside themselves. They absolutely could not believe that the Soviets, the Russians, had turned their backs on Soviet Marxism-Leninism. There was one, famously, who was at Syracuse University, who there he was on NBC News, and the man literally had tears in his eyes, and he was saying, "Don't they realize what they had and what they've given up? Don't they realize how?" This guy, he was a really convinced fellow traveler. Wouldn't it be great if we could somehow segregate the entire world into not racial or national nations, but ideological ones? If you want to be a communist, this is where you live. If you want to be a capitalist, you live over here. You know, that sort of thing. Wouldn't that make more sense?
It would be truly amazing. The problem is that socialists, communists, and sympathizers, they like to ruin things from outside, and they don't like what they did, so they try it again and again. It seems like almost like you hit your head on the wall, and you feel the pain, and then you think the second time around it's not going to hurt as much. I mean, you look at all these countries, the despot and murder and tyranny and lack of anything, lack of normal lifestyle. I'm not talking about things like cars and boats and this. I'm talking about a regular every day where you go to work, maybe you're able to feed your family, maybe take a vacation. And, in Soviet, you're allowed to do that. But, it was so difficult for most people. And the only people who like Soviet Union are either politicians, people who know how to work the system really well, but eventually they end up in jail, or people from the outside, like you just mentioned. These people who were crying when Soviets broke up, you had people who were crying when Hugo Chavez died. We're talking about tyrants, murderers, mass murderers. I'm sure there were people who cried when Hitler died, but you're talking about people that completely have no reality, no perception of reality. And if you put these people in a separate kind of nation, like you just mentioned, let them try it on each other. Let them enjoy their own world and destroy whatever they want. And maybe they'll be pleased with themselves. Maybe they'll immigrate back to America and try to ruin something that's actually working.
Jake, I want to take a quick break here, and we're going to be coming back to you in just a moment or two. And during our last segment together, I would certainly like to hear more about aftertastes and tales from the Rodina. So stay right where you are, okay? This is Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. More with Jake Danishevsky and your calls coming up, so stay right where you are.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
It feels like you're frozen, petrified. You're struggling with your mortgage payments. The bills begin to pile up. Not knowing what to do, you do nothing at all. And that's the worst thing you can do. Because if you take action, if you do something about your mortgage problems, you're far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Making Home Affordable is a free government program. Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about the options that are right for you. Real help, real answers, right now. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov and do something about your mortgage problems. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Every 20 seconds, another kid drops out of school.
If we do nothing,
3.5 million kids won't receive a diploma over the next 4 years. United Way knows that kids who have a caring adult in their life are more likely to make it. And the difference between a dropout and a graduate could be you. Take the pledge to volunteer now at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave 2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck as a gift to Dave 2037, so he can spend it on things like anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman, something cool like that. I think Dave 2037 deserves it. He worked hard. What are you getting Steve 2037?
I guess I was thinking Steve 2037 would just fend for himself.
Well, all right, but don't expect to be borrowing my anti-gravity boots.
You want to have money in your future? You got to start saving now. Putting some money from every paycheck into a savings account or contributing to your 401k can make a big difference later. Put away a few bucks, feel like a $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
Hey, let's just hope Steve 2037 doesn't get his hands on a cold time machine, because he is going to come back here and knock some sense into you.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Duke Books on ConservativeNationRadio.org.
So tell, baby, tell.
Very fine. Thank you, Greg Duran, and welcome back to Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com. Duke Brooks here, 718-305-7176 is the number, and Jake Danishevsky is with me. Jake, thanks for being with us tonight. Tell us all about, and we've got about 7 minutes or so left, but do the best job you can. Tell us about your book, Aftertastes and Tales, from Russia, and where you can get it.
Well, first of all, thank you, by the way, for letting me be on the show. Thank you to your listeners. And you
thank
can
you
pick
for
up
being
the
here.
Book. Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thank you. You can pick up Aftertastes and Tales from Russia basically on any online store. Excuse me. And you can pick it up on Google Books, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. You can buy it in soft cover or ebook format if you have Nook or Kindle. And the reason I decided to write a book, I say it in the book and I say it every single time. I didn't feel like I wanted to write a book. I had to write this book. I mean, I'm not claiming to know more than others, but I had something to say. And I have a friend, we have a family friend who said, you're the only person I know close enough who lived behind the Iron Curtain or in such a society like Soviet Union or any socialism. And that was one of the first inspirations for my book, and I mentioned his name in the book. I also started to write on Facebook and speak out. I always looked at politics as something that maybe I'm watching, but I'm not participating. When I heard Barack Hussein Obama speak in the 2008 debates, and I heard what he was saying, the quotes he was using, and the words he was portraying and delivering, the way he was saying it, it reminded me of Soviet leaders like Lenin, Stalin, Brezhnev. I mean, it reminded me of Karl Marx's quotes, Saul Alinsky's quotes. And I said, you know what? I better start speaking out because I do have something to say. And when I started speaking out, people picked it up, and they truly started to ask a lot of questions. So I said, you know what? Instead of typing it all over the place, let me put it in a book. Let me let American people see the way this life is and the way it could be if you don't stop what's going on right now. Even some Democrats call this a train wreck. Obamacare and what he's doing, it's a train wreck. We have a free country. Why are we fighting against freedom? That's one thing I just don't understand. And my book is trying to prove and at least wake up at least some of the people, and I said in my book, if it changes at least one mind, I already achieved more than I could possibly imagine.
Well, that would be, but you know, if it does change some people's minds, wonderful. But the fact of the matter is, when someone has a belief system, when someone simply believes that a communist or Marxist society is more, quote, just and fair, unquote, there, when somebody believes something, Jake, as you are well aware, once a belief has taken hold, there is nothing in the world that will change a person's belief. Sometimes they'll change it themselves. There will be some people that will go over there and they'll say, oh, you know, this is going to be wonderful. Socialist, communist society, it's the greatest. And then they'll realize that they were wrong and they'll come. You know, I have known some people that have, a friend of mine's cousin, I think, not her sister, but her cousin, was talking about how wonderful Mexico was. This was like 15, 20 years ago. And because Mexico has a something like a single-payer healthcare system, in other words, socialist medicine, and she, you know, she just could not believe how expensive medicine was in America, so she left America and she moved to Mexico. And when she got to Mexico, Donna said, I think she was only there for about 8 months, and she had gotten some minor health problem, forget what it was minor, whatever it was, and she said that the cousin came back to America several months later after having not been treated for this, but having been on a waiting list, you know, to get in and see so it's, you know, it's just bizarre that people will listen to the kind of nonsense and lies that the left puts out. And there are some people who are so gullible and are so stupid that they won't even question it. They won't even think it through. You know, a buddy of mine on one occasion said, communism is a great idea until you think about it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I guess, the other problem that we have in this country, Jake, is that the vast majority of people that work in media, that work in broadcasting, newspapers, certainly almost everybody that works in education, believes that Karl Marx was right. And this is a real serious problem. None of them have lived under it, but they just believe Karl Marx was right. Now, I'm not really sure, you know, when you show somebody the facts and you show them indisputably that 1 + 1 = 2, but in their minds, they still have a belief that 1 + 1 = 3. I guess there's nothing that you can do for that person except maybe shoot them.
Well, I'll tell you, you hit the nail right on the head. And I mean, the way Soviets were spreading into the Western world is through education, and they were saying, even Stalin and other leaders, Khrushchev, they said, America is a healthy body. We cannot attack it with our weapons. We'll attack it from within. And what they did, they basically, as a former KGB agent, was given speeches in the 80s. His name was Yuri, I forgot his last name. He said that one of the biggest, strongest tools that the KGB always had is demoralizing the public. Now, once you demoralize the public, you can tell them, you can show them facts, you can show them specific examples, and they're clueless because they're no longer open to the truth. It's easy to sell lies. You just, if you don't deliver on those lies, you tell more lies. And if people are demoralized, they will listen, they will eat it up, and they will say, Barack Obama promised this. Doesn't matter if he delivers, he promised. And they're demoralized, and they cannot tell otherwise.
Jake, I've got to run. Thank you so much for being with us. Quickly, tell us where we can get a hold of a copy of Aftertastes and Tales from Russia.
You can get it anywhere online. You can go to Amazon, Barnes & Nobles. You can Google it, and you can say Aftertastes and Tales from Russia, and you can buy it in different formats. And I appreciate being on the show. Thank you, everyone, very much.
Thank you, my friend. I look forward to speaking with you again soon. Jake Danishevsky, what a great guy. You know, what a great guy. I guess most Russians wanted to get over here at some time or another. Anyway, top of the hour, more of your calls and Kevin Wade coming up.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
Wow, yeah, since the storm, it's been crazy busy for us. We got all kinds of office desks coming in. Here's a fancy one right here. It's missing a leg, but that's all right. Whatever. Washers and dryers from a laundromat. Oh, wow, and check this out. Another deep fryer. And I'm not sure what this doohickey is. Yeah, most businesses weren't ready for a storm like that, you know. But our work's really piling up here at Roberts & Son Salvage.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Brooks here. Welcome to hour number two thereof, where the number is 718-305-7176. Thanks very much for being along this evening. I see the chat room is populated. I've got something right. I mean, you know who Ben Carson is. In case you don't, Ben Carson is the recently retired Chief of Pediatric Brain Surgery at the Johns Hopkins Hospital, which is certainly one of the three or four best hospitals in the entire world. And apparently the IRS has now decided to hassle Dr. Carson because apparently of the speech that he gave at the National Prayer Breakfast in February, in which he criticized Obamacare. I mean, that this is the way the left does things, and they will use the heavy-handed, bludgeon-prone government apparatus to suppress their political enemies. It is wrong to do that. The left, if that has ever been done to them in this country, and I think maybe one might argue during World War One. Well, during World War One, the Democrat progressive president Woodrow Wilson was able to get the law passed, which violated the First Amendment, and then he was able to get the Supreme Court, including Associate Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, to find the law to be valid and constitutional. But it clearly wasn't. You know, there is such a thing in this world as what's known as black letter law. And even though I am not an attorney, and I don't even play this on the radio, I think the term black letter law refers to something that is so unmistakable, so clear in its meaning, and so obvious that there is no way that it can be avoided or misinterpreted. That's what I think it means. Heck, who knows? I guess Oliver Wendell Holmes did not know what it means because he was a Civil War hero. I want to welcome my buddy Kevin Wade. Kevin, welcome aboard, my friend. How are you doing tonight?
Duke, it's always great to be with you. How are you this evening?
Well, now that the United States federal government is largely shut down, I guess I'm about as good as I can be. I mean, at the end of the day, who needs it?
Well, I woke up this morning, and I had my cornflakes, and they were there on the table, and I drove to work, and all the traffic lights were working. And I turned on my radio, and I had music and news and talk, and I went in and did a full day's work, and it seems, at least from my narrow viewpoint, that life goes on.
It does, in fact, go on, and, you know, people are I blog quite a bit on Huffington Post, and Huffington Post, obviously, is an extreme left-wing. They're right up there with Daily Kos and MoveOn.org. One might point out parenthetically that Arianna Huffington, the founder of it, is not even American. However, there are people out there that really believe that there is absolutely no way that government can possibly do one penny less than what it's already got. And if it doesn't get its hands on even more of the taxpayers' money, the consequences of that are going to be particularly dire and apocalyptic. And, there are no facts that will dissuade these people. What do you think will happen, Kevin, if the Republicans decide to stick to their commitments and their principles, and the Democrats continue to want to try to bludgeon them, but the Republicans don't give in, and all of the non-essential portions of the U.S. government by Christmas are still shut down? Do you think the American people are going to say, wait a minute, why are we paying so much in taxes if we don't need it? Why not let it go? Do you think there's any problem?
No, I think there's a tremendous amount of truth there. The more that the Republicans, and specifically in the House of Representatives, stand their ground and stand for something and stand up for the American people, the more they do this, the more likely you will see various combinations of changing influences come together. And people will begin to see that just as the sequester jester, so to speak, came to very little in the lives of most people, they'll see that as the non-essential organizations within government are rolled back and in some cases actually shut down, that life, in fact, does go on. And it'll cause people across this country to begin to question the liberal fantasy that we have to have bigger and biggest government for our traffic lights to work.
It is a liberal fantasy. There's no, for some reason, I don't understand it, why it is the idea that the liberals simply want government to be thoroughly and completely and fully involved in every single aspect of every single American's life from the instant they're born, actually from before they're born, until after they die. I don't really understand where that comes from. Do you have any insight on that?
Well, I think some of it comes from the fact that a certain group in the liberal progressive side of things really, really enjoys telling other people how to live their lives. I mean, I'm sure there is someone somewhere in the vast bureaucracy of Washington that still is turning up to work who is developing a new standard for us to wear football helmets as we sit in our Barco loungers in the evening. There is a certain element that just loves to tell other people how best to live their lives. And then there's another element that really feels that in spite of all the blessings that are right before them here in this country called America, that they've gotten a bad deal somewhere along the line, and they need Big Brother, or perhaps it's Big Mama, to step in and make things right, to get those people that wronged them in the past. And that, of course, is foolishness, because every day you start your life anew in this country. Tomorrow's a fresh start for all of us. And for those who question the validity of that, I'd say take a look at our own American history. This country grew from a cluster of coastal settlements 300 years ago. And I mean, you know, the bulk of the people were few in number, and they were within 50, 60, 100 miles maximum of the Atlantic seaboard. And we grew from that 300 years ago to a vast transcontinental nation. And by the early part of the 20th century, this nation, with virtually just a hollow shell of a federal government, but with full-blown freedoms, grew into the most powerful economy on the planet. And we grew at that point to 100 million people, a vast melting pot, a growing middle class, all done with a very small and part-time federal government. So that's the lesson of history that the liberal progressives refuse to accept.
Well, they have a belief system. When someone has a belief system, there is no fact that is going to change their mind. I mean, nothing.
Let me interrupt. That's too broad and generous to call it a belief system. It, in fact, is to their most ardent followers. It's a religion with its own litany, its own Ten Commandments. It is a religion, and even though you and I disagree with it, it's because we are not enlightened, and they will have to impose their religion on us. And this comes in stark contrast to the protections given in the First Amendment, freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, and that gives the liberal progressives great problems.
Yeah, they are, you know, when reality does not comport with their theories, they get very, very exercised. They get very, very upset. We're seeing
that. Well, they
now,
in fact, will throw out the reality. They
yes,
will just
they will.
Discredit it and say
yeah.
it's a lie. It
yeah,
simply
that's
is
exactly
a lie.
Right. And those people are kind of gullible enough to believe that. Kevin, can I ask you to stand by one moment? I want to mention one or two.
I'll be glad to.
Here. Okay. We'll be back in a moment. I'm assuming that you're aware that we at conservativenationmedia.com start off the work week every Monday in a very big way. It's Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance, but even if you're not from the volunteer state, the issues that affect Tennessee are spreading out all over America. Dave Vance brings his veterans' insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday, so make sure to check him out. Brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back, Kevin Wade, Duke Brooks here on Radio Free America, where the number is 718-305-7176. And Kevin, for those who are not aware, you ran against Tom Carper, the sitting United States Senator from Delaware last year, a Democrat, and a guy who, at the end of the day, he was always nice and polite to both of us. I mean, I always, got along with the guy, sort of. But he has never had any employer in his life except governments. I don't see how a person with that kind of background can possibly have the interests of anything other than government in mind.
Well, I think we can take that observation and extend it to the liberal progressives in the ruling class. If they are a product of government, if their earliest days receiving a paycheck were in one federal agency or another, or as a result of the largesse of a federal program that was sending them grant money as a student for never-ending ongoing collegiate studies, their life, although they won't admit it, has been very narrow. They have a very parochial, meaning a very narrow view of the world and all the workings in the world. And they bring that narrow viewpoint with them as they advance up a political ladder, and they take it to Washington. And they really have no concept of what it is to live an American life as the vast majority of people in this country live. So you see, for example, in this slim down that's taking place in Washington, I think that they would be aghast at the idea that they should not be paid while the Republic employees in the federal government are on furlough. They can't conceive of the fact that there are consequences to the actions that have been taken. They believe that they have almost a God-given right to draw on the public treasury to advance their own personal interests as well as their political views. But there is never the check and balance that you would find in everyday life or in a small business where you can only spend $1 one time, so you better think twice before you spend it. There's no consequences in terms of if you've made bad decisions and you've developed something that doesn't work, that you would lose your job and go out of business. So they live in a very cloistered environment where they're protected from the consequences of bad actions and bad judgments. We are not. We carry the burden. We pay for all of their mistakes. That's what we, the people, are left with. And we have the $17 trillion in debt. We have a dysfunctional government. We have people in Washington who don't talk to one another. They only insult one another. And we have a president who has decided not to have high school groups tour the White House while he goes off on $60 million foreign trips to southeastern Africa about a month ago. These people are really out of touch with everyday life. And I think that is at the core of the very low opinion that everyday Americans hold of Congress. Republicans and Democrats.
I thought that trip to Africa was $100 million, Kevin.
No, the low end was $60 million. I'm being gracious to the president tonight. His planners forecast the trip would range between cost between $60 million and $100 million. And I mentioned to some friends, Duke, that that I'm not sure what critical decisions were reached there in his trips to Southeast Africa that couldn't have been done on a video conference. I could compare it to Winston Churchill's first strategic meeting with the President of the United States in 1941, 1942, where they met to plan the outcome and overall strategy of global war against the fascists. And Churchill brought with him about 20 people, not hundreds. Most of them stayed at the embassy in Britain, the British embassy in Washington, while Churchill stayed as a house guest of the president. And they met for about 2 weeks, and they planned the future of the war. So that cost a nickel and a dime. When the president recently took his trip to Africa, he had 53 vehicles sent over with him, including something like 14 limousines. And one night, apparently, the first lady chose not to spend it with her husband, and she stayed in a hotel suite that cost $3,300 a night. Now, this isn't respect for the real world the rest of us are living in. This flies in the face of any statements about the sequester, any concerns about the debt ceiling, any concerns about how to actually pay for the government. These people are detached from reality of life, and that gets you right back to why they can't govern.
Well, that is certainly correct. The thing that bothers me so much is that Ann Lochner's husband earned every dime that he had himself. He went to Harvard and not only got his law degree, but got his MBA, and then he went out and started his own company. And the inheritance that he got from his father, and his father was the president of American Motors in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Remember that company?
I sure do.
Well, yeah, they. Well, was he with? No, he wasn't with GM or Ford or Chrysler. I think he was with American Motors. Am I correct? But do I remember that correctly?
That's correct. That's correct. Nash Rambler. Later on, they went on to make have the Jeep franchise, which was very good for them. And the father, George Romney, was a man who didn't go beyond high school in terms of education, and he built his life with his brains and his fists, and he built a great enterprise and employed a lot of people and made a difference in the world, and I think he raised his large family the right way. So Mitt Romney had every advantage of coming from a well-off family, but he wasn't set in life. He had to take those lessons that he had learned and make his own life, and he was very successful doing that.
Well, he did not, you know, he did some money from his, after his father, Governor Romney, died, but he gave that money away to charity. And the massive fortune that he possesses now, he on his own as a venture capitalist. And, you know, when Ann Romney showed up on TV, the leftists in the media were absolutely beside themselves, and they were as shocked and outraged as they could possibly be over the fact that she was wearing a blouse that cost $1,800. But they never, ever, ever said a word about the expense associated with maintaining Michelle Obama, who's not a constitutional officer, but who has one of the largest staffs of any individual in Washington, D.C., outside of the president of the U.S. She's got a bigger staff than the vice president does. I think, you know, the hypocrisy of this, at this point, is a longer study. So what else is there? I hope we can all get something to make it clear to the media that we think that they should handle Republican and Democrat candidates for office even-handedly.
Well, one of the problems we have with the mainstream media is hopelessly short-sighted. They can only interpret things through the lens of their own experience, and that turns out to be a very liberal, progressive experience. They are stunned when conservatives, you know, put out facts and figures and programs that don't line up with you know, the catechism of the liberal progressives. They dismiss it and they discount it. And they use a great power of the pen to basically twist and distort the message coming from, well, the conservative side of things. And this is why every conservative candidate who runs for local office, statewide office, national office has to swim upstream all the time. It's not only having a message, but having your message be distorted and twisted or, in fact, simply ignored by the media in the marketplace where you find your constituents.
When you were running for the U.S. Senate, that I could put out press releases that could be parsed and mischaracterized by the media, but I know it was frustrating that the media was focused on Senator Carper because, frankly, they were in his corner. But then when that attorney from Sussex County, Alex Pyrie, showed up, at that moment the narrative was that it was Pyrie versus Tom Carper. We couldn't do anything to draw the media's attention to our campaign. And I wonder what lessons could be drawn from that.
It's a difficult uphill climb. I mean, if you want to make a spectacle of yourself, if you want to become a clown on the public stage, you'll get lots of coverage because that feeds the narrative that the liberal press wants to take out to their readership or their listeners. But if you want to talk about issues, let me put it this way: if Abraham Lincoln were to appear at the National Cemetery in Gettysburg to give his Gettysburg Address, the media would report it as a short and uninspiring speech, vaguely connected to the roots of this nation, and then move on to some liberal interpretation of what needed to be said. So the problem you face is that you can't get your message conveyed through the media because they will encapsulate it within the limitations of their own ability to understand and accept what you have to say. I was interviewed once for one of the large media organizations in the state of Delaware, And the person interviewing me, who writes quite a few stories, said, could you explain how low taxes, low tax rates, increase tax revenue? And the man was being very honest. He couldn't grasp that, you know, as you reduce the burden on small businesses will use those energies not to feed the tax beast, the IRS in Washington, but would use those energies and resources to, in fact, grow their businesses. And that very naturally and immediately turns into new hiring and additional payroll, additional paychecks, and wider prosperity. And the dynamo begins to wind up just like a turbocharger in an engine. But that is something that this one reporter simply and honestly could not grasp. But he wasn't paying much attention while I tried to go through a three-minute economic lecture. And he never warmed through that part of the economic message that I was trying to carry. This is just the lay of the land. You have to find ways to reach people that don't include going through the Grand Central Station of the mainstream media. And we live in different times. I mean, the fact that you're on the radio at this network right now, you know, Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, is an indication of ways to reach people without being filtered. The use of the social networking sites, the use of Twitter, the use of YouTube videos. These are so many different ways to reach an audience with an unfiltered message and ways for them to reach back to you. And, of course, the tremendous balancing influence of talk radio. Or in talk radio and broadcast radio, you have to earn and keep an audience. You have to compete in a marketplace of ideas and entertainment and information. And it's not remarkable to me that the successful radio talk shows tend to be conservative-themed shows because they make the most sense to the most people. So these are the other ways that future candidates can be successful, is using the many other outlets to the folks and not restrict yourself to the media train schedule run by the liberals.
Well, in liberal media, the traditional media model has been about 60 years ago. It is one way. The newspaper editor would write an editorial and it would be published. And he was under no obligation whatsoever to publish a letter to the editor or to participate in anybody had met. He had no obligation to do that whatsoever. Maybe market forces would require him to do so, but nothing else would. But now there is also, in other words, his ideas or the ideas of the editorial board or the ideas of news anchor on television was actually an editorialist. Those were never held up to scrutiny or subjected to vigorous questioning by anyone except the people putting them out. And liberal ideas can only flourish in that kind of a one-way mirror environment, an environment where the ideas cannot be held up to scrutiny, because when liberal ideas are held up to scrutiny, they fail every single time.
That's what provokes the hostile blowback from the liberal progressives. That's why they begin to say liars and liars, and it's faux news, and what's that expression? Conservatives are insulted when you confront them with lies, but liberals are insulted when you confront them with the facts.
Right.
I'll use an example. In the first state of Delaware, so we're on a coastal plain, we're basically a low-lying state on the Delmarva Peninsula, and we have a lot of waterfront in this state. And the state government, headed up by liberal progressive, has launched a campaign for over a year now to educate, I would say alarm, but their word is educate the people, about the possibility of sea level rising 5 feet before the end of the century. And in fact, if sea level around the world rises by 5 feet before the end of the century, there's going to be a completely different coastline in the state of Delaware. But and this message gets carried around the state by people funded by the state government. It also gets picked up by the state's main newspaper, who carries it as if it were pronounced by Moses coming down from Mount Sinai. This is gospel truth. If you examine, if you ask the question, how do you determine that the sea level is rising? How do you determine that it's rising this quickly? And how do you decide that it's going to potentially could rise 5 feet before the end of the century? You will get an answer that they measure it. And then you'll ask, well, where do you measure it? How do you measure it? There are two sticks. Two sticks that they use to measure the average sea level. Just two locations. And based on readings over the past 100 years, they projected that there's a rising sea level here in the state based on two measurement positions. Now, the fact is these sticks, these markers, are likely subsiding into the muck. Duke, have you ever stood at the surf line at the beach and just stood there with a little washes around your legs? Do you yes. feel that you're subsiding into the sand?
No question as this, about it, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, this is likely what's happening at these two sticks that are being used to project that we potentially could have a five foot rise in sea level between now and the end of the century. It's absurd, but the mainstream media in the state carries it as if it is gospel truth. And there has actually been some rebuttal saying, well, there's no consideration of potentially a 5 foot increase in sea level in, say, New Jersey, Maryland, or Virginia, other coastal states, which has prompted some on the liberal side to say, well, there's going to be a bulge in the ocean along the Delaware coastline. This is beyond belief, but it's part of the litany of that, not worldview, the religion that the liberal progressives carry. Because, it's religion. You cannot question it. Don't challenge it with facts. Don't challenge it with prove it. Don't challenge it with what's your hypothesis, how did you test it, how do you predict. They don't want that. They simply want the edict to come down from above so that all of us can fall in line under their direction. But there are some things that work in our favor, and it's called common sense. The popular acceptance of, for example, man-made global warming burst in this part of the world about 4 years ago when we had the heaviest snowfall we've ever had in human memory in one winter. Bitter cold, huge amounts of snow. And all of a sudden, the personal experience of everyday people said, you know, I don't think the world's getting warmer, at least not in my backyard, not in my zip code. So where the liberal progressives lose the people is when the people have an experience that's contrary to the religious litany of the liberal left. When, for example, when the left says, we have the Affordable Care Act, and this is going to provide health insurance coverage to everyone in this country, and then you read stories on this early phase of their rollout, where apparently in the state of Louisiana, not a single person has signed up for the program yet. There's other examples of people who tried to simply go to a website, the same type of website you would have for Sears or Home Depot or any of the department stores, which you could easily use. But when you go to the website designed by the federal government in support of the Obamacare, the website crashes, it doesn't work, it hangs up. And when you call to get information on the helpline, there's no one there to answer it. So this is a typical snafu organized by liberal progressives who apparently spent a lot of the taxpayer money and never tested whether or not they got what they asked for. So the personal experience of everyday folks is in contrast to the cotton candy promises of those in the liberal left. And that is why over time the conservative views will hold forth again, because conservative views are based on everyday, practical, hardworking common sense.
Kevin, can you stand by for a moment or two? I've got to take a quick break here, but I do want to follow up with you on a few things. We have a few more minutes.
Be glad to.
All right. All righty. Conservativenationmedia.com, that you are a conservative. And means you love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Now, since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best warehouse for all your conservative emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds, starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution. Conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. More with Kevin Wade and your calls coming up, so don't go away.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy
backsplash. I want to be a bike that races around the country.
When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up, I want to be a rocking chair on a sunny porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be
a...
I want to
be
a...
I want to be
a... I want to be a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Here at the GED Pep Talk Center, we've got a range of pep talkers standing by. Call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org and find free classes in your area. GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Penny Lane, there is a bar to show you photographs.
To try rooting for your own damn country for a change.
Yeah, I agree, Greg Duran. That is a very good question. This is Radio Free America on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Duke Brooks here. The number is 718-305-7176. Kevin Wade is with me. Kevin, thanks for hanging out with me this evening. What do you think is really going on in Washington? And I, you know, what do you think we should do? And when I say we, I mean people that actually love the country as opposed to people that love the Marxist theories. That would be the Democrats.
Well, what I think we should do is I think the Republicans need to stand their ground on, if not outright defunding Obamacare forever, certainly delaying its rollout for a year. This is not, they're not acting because they've gotten together with an oddball right-wing idea. They're simply doing the work of the people. Obamacare was at best controversial from the beginning, and now nearly 4 years since its initial passage, they haven't been able to get the most simple of the bugs and kinks out of the program. And by a wide majority in this country, people are opposed to Obamacare. The number of people who support it is at an all-time low. So the mandate of the people has been given to the representatives in the U.S. House of Representatives, those closest to the people, and they're acting on that mandate to end Obamacare. This is not a case where this is a law and the law has to be supported because it was passed in a previous Congress. We don't work that way. A law that remains unchallenged in the future is a law that passed with bipartisan support. There was no bipartisan support for this Obamacare, this Affordable Care Act. And the longer the Republicans stand in opposition to it, the more forces will rally around the Republican Party. It will permanently imprint in the minds of the American people that it was the Republican Party who stood up to do the tough work of removing the burden of Obamacare and the threats of Obamacare and the job destruction of Obamacare from the American scene. I think it's something that it's not a political ploy. I think it's actually the workings of this American republic in the highest sense that the people have asked for Obamacare to be ended, and they've given a mandate to the U.S. House of Representatives, and they're acting on it.
Well, I think the American people have now realized – I mean, this is one of the reasons why the Republicans made gains in the House in 2010 – because the American people just did not trust the idea of the federal government running their health care. I mean, I don't know about you, Kevin. I know your wife, Gail, is a health care professional, but you don't want a government bureaucrat standing between you and the physician or nurse or surgeon that is delivering care, do you?
No, not at all. I mean, that's a private relationship, a patient and the doctor and the patient. And the idea that we would have the same federal institutions and bureaucratic mindset that have brought the IRS into use as a political tool against some in this country, that have led to the lies and deceptions related to Benghazi, where simple questions won't be answered. To the gross incompetence that you see in so many federal programs, where the waste and abuse is just appalling, to bring that mindset into the doctor-patient relationship is beyond fundamentally flawed. It's a danger. I know someone who, and you and I have spoken offline about this, and I won't mention names, but I know someone who grew up in a country that had quote-unquote free health care. And this person is a very small child, had to have surgery, but there's no anesthesia for that child. And the mom and the dad and the staff in the operating room held this 5-year-old down while the surgery took place, and they cut away and they cut away, and the kid screamed and screamed, and as an adult, it's still remembered. That is national health care. Now, who do you complain to when something like that happens? Because it's all under the same management. And maybe if you become the squeaky wheel in that type of system, maybe you don't even get an appointment for surgery the next time. No. This is contrary to the interests of everyday people. We have the highest level of health care, the best health care in the world in this country. It is uneven. There are gaps. It's a little bit lumpy. But for the vast majority of people, it's the finest health care that mankind has ever known. And to put this through a giant sausage machine called the Affordable Care Act, and to require that the IRS be their bill collector, so to speak, and require that you report on the most personal details of your health history to a federal agency who may or may not honor the secrecy of that information. No, this isn't the way we work. Not in this environment where we have real questions about a right to privacy and a right to conscience, and let alone Second Amendment issues. I mean, we have an intrusive federal government that accumulates power and tends to use it against we the people. This is not a time to put that power into the hospital waiting room, where at some point in the future maybe they pick the good people or the bad people in terms of who gets the treatment, who gets the anesthesia.
Well, it's pretty obvious that that's the way they're doing things now. The IRS recently hassled Dr. Ben Carson presumably because President Obama and others gave the National Prayer Breakfast. Kevin, thanks so much for being with us tonight. We'll be able to join me again at some point in the coming weeks and months. I hope we will.
Duke, I always enjoy it. I look forward to our next visit together.
Thank you, my friend. I hope to talk to you again soon. Have a great night, buddy.
Very good.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All righty. Always a pleasure to speak to you. He is a great guy. And in the interest of a personal friend of mine, and I always look forward to seeing him again. We have, it is incidentally about quarter of, we've got about 15 minutes left in this edition of Radio Free Delmarva. You know, Kevin and I spoke about a variety of subjects, of course. And the left can't stand the Second Amendment and Americans' right to keep their arms. And now there's something else that they're certain to hate. It's the Second Amendment Forum on conservativenationmedia.com with Maxwell Winchester Roberts. We welcome Max and his decades of firearms and Second Amendment rights experience Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. The leftist administration in D.C. wants to disarm the American people, and Max just won't let that happen. The Second Amendment Forum, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, the place where American liberties win. I've got a feeling we're going to be crazy. Max Roberts, and I don't mean a postman. About 13 and a half minutes now before the top of the hour. As I mentioned earlier, in case you're not aware, Tom Clancy has passed away. And I, you know, I have read quite a few of his novels. Not all of them. Not all of them. The most recent one, the most recent book out there by Tom Clancy is called Threat Vector. And I got to be honest with you, I don't know anything about that book. I had not heard of it before reading about it today in the series of obituaries that are coming out about the poor guy. We still don't know what it is that took him from us. Apparently, I would guess he was at Hopkins in Baltimore when he passed away earlier today, or perhaps it was yesterday, I don't know, but it was revealed this morning. Anyway, about 12 and a half minutes now before the top of the hour, we're going to take a quick break. More of your calls are coming up, so stay right where you are.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Hey, there he is. How's it going?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you going to shake my hand or what?
I'm having a stroke.
Wow, you're not even moving your arm.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you okay?
I'm having a stroke.
Your face looks weird, too.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you having a seizure or something?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST, F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately. Because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why Didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Duke Brooks on conservativenationradio.org.
Just about a little over 9 minutes to go on this edition of the Internet's greatest radio show. I mean, I did get word the other day that they are building a special wing at the Museum of Broadcasting to house all of the awards that Radio Free America will be earning. And now, my buddy Max Roberts is with us. Max, how you doing tonight, pal?
Oh, I am doing pretty good. How about you, Duke?
Not bad. And what exactly are you going to be talking about tomorrow night on the Second Amendment Forum?
Oh, well, we're going to talk about this and a few things that have gone on in the Washington, D.C. area and nationally that we need to talk about politically. First of all, we need to talk about the shooting that happened at the Washington Navy Yard and the implications that it has. And we're also going to talk about the UN Small Arms Treaty, how you know, John Kerry and Obama have went and signed a treaty which is clearly unconstitutional and a threat to our national sovereignty. And we shall have some pretty good thoughts about three interesting guns of the week we'll be talking about. Plus, we will also have some information on conceal to carry again, and we will also be talking about. I got a surprise here, there, which I'll have for the audience.
Okay, very fine. I'm sure you're aware that Tom Clancy passed away. Did you read any of his books?
Yes, Tom Clancy passed away this morning. I read about it on Facebook this morning, and I was pretty upset by it. The guy, I have seen. See, I have not read many of his books, but I have seen a lot of his work on television, such as The Sum of All Fears, Hunt for Red October, and Patriot Games, and a lot of the other things. And Clancy was definitely a very talented person. He was from Loyola High School in Maryland. He was a Maryland native, and he was an insurance salesman who really made it big, and he did a great job. I thought he did a very great job of writing technical books on military hardware and everything that associated with it. He did a very good job. He brought excitement. He brought intrigue, and he educated people.
He was a very good writer. Well, Max, we're all looking forward to tonight's edition of the Second Amendment Forum right here on conservativenationmedia.com, 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock Central, and you have yourself a great night, pal, and I look forward to hearing you tomorrow.
Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Max is a professional college individual. You know, I am a huge supporter of the Second Amendment in this country, as I am all of the 10 amendments of the U.S. Constitution that comprise the Bill of Rights, all of them. Of course, in practice, the United States government has violated every single one of the 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights, every one. U.S. government has violated every single one of them. And it's funny, you know, they always have a reason. You know, they always have a reason. It is just, I don't know what we're going to do to get people in there who actually respect the U.S. Constitution as written. 718-305-7176 is the number here. Got about 5 minutes left on this edition of Radio Free America. Now, here is something. This is going to shock you, especially, I mean, if you know me, this is going to really stun you. Elsie Greenwood has passed away at the age of 67. Now, if you paid any attention at all to the National Football League in the late 1970s, and I hope Christopher Manti is listening to this. If he is, he's probably had a heart attack and passed out by now, based on the fact that I'm actually talking about the NFL. The Pittsburgh Steelers, who were a superpower in the NFL back then, there's no question about it. Part of their power was a defense that was known as the Steel Curtain. And the Steel Curtain comprised four guys: Mean Joe Green, Ernie Holmes, Dwight White, and the gentleman who just passed away, Elsie Greenwood. And I, you know, it's funny, those guys that were playing, even back then, I mean, I remember some of the great NFL players of the 1960s, names like Garo Yeprinian, Y.A. Tip, obviously Joe Namath, Tom Brookshire, Johnny Unitas, Gino Marchetti, those guys, can you imagine the headline, Tom Brookshire and Garo Yeprinian arrested for conspiracy and murder. Can you imagine them, anybody in the NFL really before Joe Namath, having their name in the newspaper for drunken disorderly, DWI, fighting, brawl? No. You know, I mean, the guys like Dean Joe Green, Elsie Green, Holmes and White, you know, the Steel Curtain, they actually conducted themselves very, very well in public, which is something that the NFL clear. The NFL players today, I don't care who disagrees with me on this, but it seems to me today the National Football League comprises a large number of gang-banging thugs. We've got one that is on, will soon be on trial for murder in Massachusetts, Aaron Hernandez. I have no idea who that was before. He was arrested for murder. And a relative of his also is a person of interest in another murder. The guy with the Carolina Panthers, a guy named Ray Kalina, remember this. He's going to be in prison for another 15 or 20 years because he was convicted of murder while he was a key defensive player, maybe a receiver, I don't know. I don't remember. But he was a first-string player with the Carolina Panthers, and I think he killed his wife or his ex-wife, and, you know, he was convicted. He did it. I mean, what is going on? Maybe the NFL needs to realize they are what people today would refer to as a role model, what I would refer to as heroes to a lot of young people. They're examples. A lot of young people look up to the NFL, and rightly so, except the example that's being given is wrong. The example that's being given in the NFL is, you kind of play by the rules on the gridiron, on the field, but there is a completely separate set of rules for you on the field. And the ones that get caught committing murder and other very serious crimes that a lot of NFL players have been convicted of, or at least there was credible suspicion, the mistake was that they got caught. That's the message that's going out today. Next Wednesday at the same time, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 Central, Dan Richter, star of the Kubrick film 2001, A Space Odyssey. You're going to want to be there for that. Trust me. Thanks very much for being along tonight. I do look forward to speaking to you again next Wednesday. Have yourselves a wonderful day.